Chapter 3, The Terms of Interference. When we were kids, we thrilled as the Lone Ranger, one of the greatest humans ever, chased bad guys, Mexicans, spurring to the galloping rhythm, ta-da-dum, 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 dum-dum. The hombres raced to the border to the same pounding measure. Get across the Rio Grande, and you're scot-free. The banditos would celebrate by flipping the bird, knowing Kemosabe would never cross after them. Scoundrels on the other side of the river were somehow different and need not fear the Lone Ranger coming across to even the score. Across that line, victims must look out for and perpetrators may serve themselves. Why? Well, jurisdiction, of course, sovereignty, the basket of rights continually insisted upon by those in power for thousands of years. At one time, only kings and their friends enjoyed this divine right of sovereignty. Now, whole countries do, around 200 of them. Thus, in one nation it is declared, thou shalt not cut off the clitorises of young women, while in another, with nothing more than a, sorry, quite sovereign, you know, they gash horrifyingly away. And it's none of our business, right? If that is right, there's something terribly unsatisfying about that righteousness, particularly for the victims. Kemosabe no cross Rio Grande? Perhaps shame on Kemosabe. Heap big shame. No cross Rio Grande to chase pricks, but only to import strawberries, limones, Brussels sprouts, and tequila all winter. Only cross Rio Grande for vacations, not for responsibility. Subtitle: Sticking Our Nose into the Unruly Behavior of Scoundrels. Why may young women who are raped, mutilated, murdered, and discarded in the dumps of Ciudad Juarez not expect to be protected from rapists, mutilators, and murderers, at least as much as our women in El Paso, across the Rio Grande, in Texas, USA? Or what about the captive sex slaves of ISIS and Boko Haram? When we dwindle to excuses like sovereignty or religion in the defense of child genital mutilation, rape, and murder, everyone knows the score. Perpetrators know they will not be stopped, and both victims and bystanders quite properly feel disgusted. But why must we feel helpless? Why, at some line in the sand, does evil become none of our business? If we were to shoulder the responsibility and chase down relentless, interminable, insufferable pricks, disregarding their defenses like sovereignty, religion, or private property, upon what authority could we ride across the Rio Grande and run them down on their turf? That we have the responsibility is evident to every kid in second grade, though everything changes outside the school grounds. How do we justify sticking our nose into the unruly behavior of sovereign, religious, or other pricks who defile the rights of others just because they can? Ironically, the proper authority may arise from the same body of common law upon which we all insist, pricks and all the rest of us country clubbers alike, to protect our property rights in domestic and commercial transactions. The law of trusts. Although what follows is a bit suit and tie, I encourage you to trundle onward for a bit, which I grant will bring you wandering perilously close to legalese, though still, it may be just the fix for our ticket. When you pay money into a lawyer's office, your check is made out to the lawyer, open quotes, in trust, close quotes. You have created a legal relationship, a legal entity called a trust. When lawyers take money in trust, the law makes them the trustee of that money and makes you, the client, beneficiary of the trust. The obligation that the law imposes upon the trustee is called the fiduciary obligation. It's the highest obligation imposed by civil law, and it requires the trustee to act in the absolute utmost good faith. Trusts are a strange entity, originally created by common law and then adopted by legislation. Their essential purpose is to prevent cheating in relationships that naturally give rise to an extraordinary opportunity to abuse something that belongs to another. The trust arises at law precisely because such circumstances provide, to lawyers for example, just such an extraordinary opportunity for abuse. They might take your money and use it on the stock market, at the racetrack, or in a cocaine deal. And as long as it's returned to you when required, you are none the wiser. But your money was put at risk, which you did not authorize, and that is a breach of the trust. If they spend your money on one pack of cigarettes, even if they replace the money, that is a breach of the trust. No matter what happens, without exception, the trustee is liable to the beneficiary to not abuse the extraordinary opportunity that comes of holding the money. If the beneficiary's money is used or risked in any way, except in strict accordance with the instructions and all of the trustee's other obligations at law, the trustee is personally liable to the beneficiary for all losses. So complete is the duty owed that, should your money be lost by the trustee, all of the trustee's assets will go to repay you. This includes their cottage, their boat, their watch, their rare dog, and gifts to their spouse, family, and friends. Everything. Property is the simplest, but not the only case of the law following the concepts of trusts. Since the founding of their country, America's courts have been advancing case law brought on the public trust doctrine, a part of American jurisprudence that provides that government holds essential natural resources, including navigable waters and the atmosphere, in trust for present and future generations. It is said to be a breach of the public trust to take secret profit, bribes, for the administration of authority entrusted to a public officer. By legislation, corporate directors owe a fiduciary obligation to their corporation. All agents are fiduciaries of their principals. So, if a real estate agent makes a side deal on your transaction and takes money out of the deal, more than the contract commission, they breach the trust and the obligation. Although the First Amendment may protect the right to lie in America, trustees do not enjoy the protection of that dubious excuse. When trustees breach a fiduciary duty, they do not get to say, "It's a free country." The conditions of the trust and fiduciary obligation are set by the evidence and the circumstances, but when the evidence is unclear or in dispute, the court always goes against the trustee. A trustee can never win at he said, she said. Without these fiduciary obligations, there would be innumerable untrustworthy lawyers and accountants, and estate planning would be severely limited. Business, the world over, would come to a chaotic standstill, and there would be many, many more successful scoundrels. Lawyers would be almost impossible to control without the law of trusts. Most of their professional fees arise in part by the execution by them of trusts, the trusts that protect your funds in their hands. Where these trusts do not prevail, bribery is everything. Our capacity to develop economically depends on property owners, real estate, and all other property, including cash, being confident in their right of ownership to own what they own securely. Trusts provide that assurance in the law's highest degree.
What does this have to do with universal rights?
The law of trust provides a remarkable tool for enforcement of rights in court. Its evolution depends on the creativity of lawyers to help the court understand and recognize emerging trusts. Upon what trusts might universal rights and the accordance of them to all others depend? In a constitutional democracy that proclaims life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness the cornerstones of their constitutional accord, universal rights must be a component of the public trust. If accordance of universal rights is our duty, what sense would that duty make without a legal mechanism to enforce it? Upon what basis will we justify enforcement against someone who proclaims, for example, religious freedom or protection of a sovereign boundary when she insists upon slashing off the clitoris of her 12-year-old niece? What are the proper terms for interference, for sticking our noses into the unruly privacy of sovereign or religious pricks? Those who have made it this far in these my tidings may have detected the influx of a drier note. That is about to continue, but only for a bit. Although I am in recovery from having myself been a lawyer, still, their language, well handled, is the best for some things. And so, for those who might plow on, I hope color commentary will entice you further where mere light may not. I'll warrant that when this is threshed and ruminated, there will be all the time in the world for mixed metaphors. Some of what follows I did not make up. Subtitle: The Principles That Vindicate Intervention.
Who are you to say?
I know a thing or two about the wealthy and about pricks. I have been both. I've met ridiculously wealthy guys, and having been one of them too, they don't fool me much. I owned a quarter of a company that went public and achieved a market capitalization of almost $2 billion.
At one time, I nearly bumped Keanu Reeves off the list of the 100 richest Canadians at just under 300 million. Now, I'm mostly over that. I'm a lawyer who escaped the day-to-day practice of law years ago, but I practiced for 15 years and acted as trustee in thousands of transactions. I have been charged with felonies in the United States, convicted and sentenced to prison, and I was party to a $250 million forfeiture for transferring online gambling money. So I have been treated to the brutal disdain and disrespect that comes of being Uncle Sam's prisoner in these times. My most important credential is that there are those to whom I too have been a prick. Millions of them. For starters, I've been an importer of leather from India, and owner of a private jet burning more fuel than if I drove everywhere in three loaded semis. But the situation for most pricks is complicated, and not everything we pricks do is prickish. For years, I've been a director on behalf of the preeminent ecologist David Suzuki, and I am co-founder of DSmog Blog Group, a chain of leading blogs about climate and the PR pollution that clouds climate science. So perhaps what follows will also help me atone. I offer the following principles to vindicate our intervention on behalf of the victims of pricks everywhere.